comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. It's a little bit after 4 o'clock on the summer solstice, and you are tuned to KDNK, as you might have heard a moment ago there. I am Will with the Soper Sun, bringing you half an hour of everything under the sun, a little news segment we do here on Thursdays once the paper comes out. With me in the studio is Megan Tackett.
Hola, hola.
Justin Patrick.
Good afternoon.
Aaron Daneker.
Hi there.
And hopefully on the line is Amy Haddon Marsh and Jeremy. You there, everybody?
I'm here, everybody.
I'm here.
Awesome. So I just wanted to, we've got a lot of people in today, and that's kind of on purpose, because the paper is not just Megan and I. And and contrary, Aaron was in the office a couple days ago and talking about, wow, I didn't realize it was just you guys. And the reality is it isn't. If you look at this paper, you'll see one byline from yours truly and two from Megan. And a whole bunch of other names of people who are contributing to the Sun in one way or another, and I think that's kind of unique for us. I'm proud of it. And so I wanted to feature some of our various contributors, some of whom are well known to most listeners, and some of whom are brand new. So I guess just because of the nature of cell phones and technical difficulties, let's start with people on the air or on the phone lines, just in case there's any sort of issue that gets you guys cut off. Jeremy, you actually wrote something for the Post Independent first, and then did kind of a later draft to share with us on a local man who died last year. What can you tell us about that, and why you wanted to write about it?
West was I'd call him a friend, but I can't say that I ever hung out with him outside, like the various jobs I worked that he used to come in. You know, he was like a homeless gentleman. I first came across him up in Aspen when I was working nights there. I guess that was like 13 years ago. And then I was working at Pop's Liquors, over by Red Rock Diner there. And, that was a popular haunt for him and his buddy Hawk. I was doing that about part-time for about 8 or 9 months back in 2009. And then, I ended up back in Carbondale for a stretch, working overnights at 7-Eleven there. And, that was, he used to just hang out on the wood pile out front. And, so when he got ran over last year, I felt that the coverage of it was, it was cool, but, I just thought there was a lot left out, about what he was really like. You know, the person I got the quote from, and I'm sure she's a great lady, just like a, hosts a bi-monthly homeless luncheon, and I don't think that that's really any way to, how are you going to get to know somebody just every 2 months at lunch? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So that's why his parents sent me a letter. They put this thing in the obituary that they published in the Post Independent. You know, they just wanted stories about their son because they didn't really know him as an adult. They hadn't talked to him since he was like in his teens, and he died at 45. So I sent something, and I think 5 or 6 other people sent something. He'd had some sort of, I don't even want to call it a fantasy or whatever. He talked about when he died that he wanted his ashes on the top of Mount Soberus. And I knew that, something that was said to, your 7-Eleven night clerk wasn't necessarily legally binding. but I thought I'd just take a shot for him. I'm like, hey, he was pretty drunk when he said it, but he did say that. So, I know that I'm a stranger. If you feel comfortable giving me any of your son's remains, I will try to get him to the top of Soberus. And then they got back in touch with me when they came around this summer to see what Carbondale is like. And I had lunch with them. And we didn't actually bring that up because they showed me the nice gravestone they bought for him and whatnot and told me his ashes were back in Iowa. So I just dropped that part, but then wrote the story.
Sure. Yeah. I really appreciate you doing it because, I think we all hope to have some sort of legacy, somebody remembering us in a human way when we go. And not all of us have the luxury of, family in the area or a legally binding will or anything like that to be remembered by. We've talked a little bit. It sounds like you might be doing some more stories on the local homeless, and I'm kind of putting these in air quotes because you kind of felt that it wasn't quite fair to term Wes as homeless because he had a home here.
Pretty regular spot, you know, that he lived the whole time. I mean, you know, he just couldn't afford. I mean, I know that like what houses in Glenwood are damn near $500,000.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know what they are in Carbondale, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who live in Carbondale who never afford to like own a home there. You know?
Yeah, well, if you believe Bloomberg, apparently we're at about $800,000, which makes us very affordable compared to Aspen.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate you doing that, and Jeremy's first time writer for the Soper Sun, to my knowledge, and probably not a last time.
My kids have been in it twice before.
Oh, cool!
That's awesome.
Yeah, like you got pictures of them at the last two Fourth of July parades.
Oh, very cool. It's coming
kind of
right up.
You know, first time for me, but the family's getting used to it.
Yeah, very cool. Now, thank you very much, and you're welcome to sign off or stay in and pipe up as you feel comfortable. Amy, you took a pretty big assignment from me a couple weeks back when I got word that there were a lot of ditches drying up or getting closed off on Missouri Heights. And
Oh my gosh, Missouri Heights ditches are all shut off. Well, they're not all shut off yet.
So, well, tell me about it.
Well, it's really dry up there. It's just really dry. And I spoke with several people. Susan Proctor lives up there. Kit Strang and Gay Lewis. I also talked with Jim Neflanik, who is not on Missouri Heights, but he usually hello?
That was not you. I think that was Jeremy signing off.
Because I'm just hearing a dial tone.
Yep.
There we go.
Is it gone?
Yeah, it's off.
Okay.
Anyway, I also spoke with Jim Neflanik, who's a longtime rancher, but he gets his hay off Spring Valley, normally not Missouri Heights. And I also spoke with Felix Tavor, I think is his last name. But, you know, it's the water situation up there is extremely complicated. I mean, it's like a little microcosm of the state water laws. There are ditches everywhere, and I only really focused on the upper part of Cattle Creek, not the lower part. And, you know, the Needham Ditch, which is one of the main ditches, it's shut off except for the Strang water rights and their senior rights. And if anybody knows anything about Colorado water rights, it's, you know, first in line, first in right. And the Strang rights were purchased in the late 1800s. And so they get the water if, you know, if nobody else, you know, if they need their water, let's say they have 10 feet of water. I don't know what their water rights are, but if they have 10 feet of water and they're not getting their 10 feet of water, they can put a call on the Needham Ditch and get their 10 feet of water. And that could mean that everybody else who has junior rights doesn't get any water. And that's sort of where it's at right now with the Needham Ditch. And it's, you know, it's mid-June. These people are saying that usually their ditches will run, you know, into July. Gay Lewis, who gets her water from the middle ditch, which is a tributary of the Mountain Meadow Ditch, which is, I mean, it's really complicated. Basically, she usually gets 36 days of water, and this year she's getting 13. So it's, you know, it's really, really low. People are getting, you know, maybe half the hay that they usually get, and they won't get a second cutting. So it's really dry up there. That's all I can say. It's really dry.
Yeah, well, that seems, you know, and I've had several people say to me, and to Megan, I believe, you know, just because it rained a couple of times over the weekend
does not mean that
drought is over.
No, and, you know, I talked with Liza Mitchell over at Roaring Fork Conservancy about that, and I think that's really key for people to know. I mean, we could get all of this rain, but it's not going to mean anything. You can't recover lost snowpack. You know, the rain will green things up, and yeah, it will really help keep the grass green, keep the hay going, pastures going, but it doesn't do anything for water storage or for snowpack. Not a thing.
Yeah. So we're going to continue to try to keep an eye on the drought from various angles, and I'm hoping Amy will be one of our chief allies in making that happen.
Certainly.
Let's briefly transition. And again, Amy, you're welcome to stay on or not at your discretion. Aaron, you're our optimistic, positive story for the week.
Yeah, I got the fun assignment.
Yeah.
Sure.
Tell us about what was going on in the library on Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for having me on. But on Tuesday, the Denver Zoo, two young women representatives came down and put on a show for the children in the audience and brought down four animals from the zoo. And it was packed in there in the Callaway Community Center. I was walking around children trying not to punt a child getting my shot. I was amazed at how many kids were there, but, it was exciting, educational little show that they put on. They brought down, a snake, a possum, I think a hawk and a skink.
A what?
A skink. Yeah.
A blue-tongued one.
It's a
blink.
Yeah, yeah. It basically looks like a lizard. I learned a lot.
I'm learning right now.
Yeah. No, it was very, like I said, it was very educational if you're seven or over that. it was a good time. At the end, you got to touch the skink if you were quiet enough. Definitely they came prepared. It was two young women. The children were trying their best to be quiet. And they came prepared with games and definitely knew how to work the crowd. And it sounds like they were doing the circuit. I think Garfield County Libraries brought them out and they were making their way down Valley, starting in Carbondale. So.
Yeah, well, we got to see them on the PI yesterday. We got to see your photo in today's paper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you got to learn something there. I'm glad you didn't punt any children. That would be really bad for our reputation. Yeah. I just want that on the
record. Do you have that kind of liability coverage?
No, I don't think so. I'm glad everybody, I'm hoping that our freelancers and our staff get to learn and enjoy this process. Megan, I'm sure you just, Megan listened to a 3-hour recording of Crystal River Caucus meeting.
Wow. Wow.
And learned a lot about how bighorn sheep came over from across
Bering Strait.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. It was riveting. It was a 2-hour and 46-minute meeting with no real fast forward option. But that way I got to really steepen it and I did learn things. The wildlife biologist really wanted to make sure that everybody really understood the main general species that exist in the Crystal Valley, and that included their migratory and historical patterns and their, whether they're omnivores versus vegetarians and where they like to hang out and why that might be. So I walked away knowing a lot about bighorn sheep in particular. So I feel like that gives me some sort of street cred in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
But it was also kind of interesting to listen to the Crystal River Caucus just in general, and you know, the facilitator of that meeting. My hat's off to her. And Amy, I actually found an interview you had done with her, I think last year, right?
Was that Delia? Was
yes.
that Dee Malone?
Yes, yeah. It was Dee Malone. Yeah.
Yeah, she's
she
a good friend.
Was so impressive because, as you can imagine, this is a hot button issue for the residents that actually live in the Crystal Valley, where this Carbondale to Crested Butte Trail is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of this meeting was very much, hey, we've invited this panel of experts. They're going to give presentations from their, you know, respective perspectives. And then the audience can ask questions so that they feel, you know, better prepared to be engaged in the whole process. And as you can imagine, that there was an awful lot of Ms. Malone saying, well, that's not really a question, but let's see if I can rephrase this.
She's great. You should hear her handling the rancher crowd at a wolf reintroduction.
Oh, I bet. Sure. I bet. I was impressed.
Yeah. Speaking of long meetings, Justin, I consigned you to sitting in on a couple of affordable housing or regional housing task force meetings over the last few weeks.
Mine was only a brief 1.5 hours.
Oh, that's pretty good, you know, compared to three.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's one thing if you're there in person and it's another if you're listening from, your usual seat at the bar.
Indeed. Which is where I heard about the tree, so it was worth it.
We'll get back to the tree. But first, Justin, tell us about the task force.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think it's the age-old question in this valley, which is how to provide affordable housing to the folks that do want to live here. And your previous caller actually touched on this issue with, you know, some people just never being able to afford a place to live here. And I think that's more commonly the case. And this commission, a task force, it's headed by Bill Lamont. He's a longtime resident, and he's just a retired individual at this point trying to better the community. And his idea is to copy what has been done in Summit County, which is to create what is called a multi-jurisdictional housing authority, which would there are many housing authorities in Colorado, but they typically follow county lines or city lines or, you know, town lines.
Sure.
The idea behind a multi-jurisdictional authority is that it can cross these lines and it can encompass an entire geographic area that is bound together in some sort of, you know, realistic sense. And that's obviously the Roaring Fork Valley. That's what we have here. People live all up and down the valley. It's not, you can live in one place, work in another. I mean, there are just all sorts of boundary divisions. So,
sure, you got Eagle County, you got Gunnison County there in the mix. It's not just Pickens and Garfield.
Right. So I think what Bill Lamont is trying to do here is say, look, it's not about trying to find individual solutions for all these individual areas. We've got to come up with a regional solution to the housing problem. And that's what he is taking on. And I wish him the best of luck. It is going to be an enormous task. He has received some initial funding, I believe through the state. Not a lot, but enough to commission a survey, which he has already launched. It's, if you read the article, the website's there. You can go and fill out the survey yourself if you're a local resident. And he's trying to gather some data to start off with. And I think about 1,500 people have actually filled out that survey, which is a pretty significant number. And they're looking at who lives in different types of residences, what are their long-term goals, how many jobs do they work, where do they commute. I mean, it's a pretty extensive survey. Lots of good data is going to come out of that. And then from there, he's creating three different task forces, land use, affordable housing, and development. And he's calling on and inviting specialists in all those fields and just general, you know, citizens as well to come in and sit down and hash out a long list of issues, concerns, problems, creative solutions that he is trying to catalog to come up with some real solutions for this problem. And those task forces will communicate with each other and formulate a comprehensive, not policy, but ideas package, I suppose you might call it, with the eventual idea that this could potentially be put on the ballot at some point and receive some hardcore funding from the voters through a variety of mechanisms, which again are detailed in the article. But in Summit County, for example, last year, their multi-jurisdictional housing authority raised something around over $300,000. And that money can be spent to subsidize housing. It can be spent to market certain programs or ideas to find creative solutions to problems. So it really could make a difference.
Excellent. Now, Justin, you, in addition to sitting in the back of meetings for us, have a real job at Wilderness Workshop.
That's true.
I know there's a few things going on over there, so tell us real quick what's going on. We've already talked about Sloan and Will, but what you got a lot going on over the summer.
We do have a lot going on, and I ask people to go to our website, wildernessworkshop.org. I'm not going to get into all the things we have going on, but I did want to tout something special that we have on Saturday, which is real cool. We have a professional photographer. His name is John Mullen. He's coming in from Boulder. He is a backcountry photographer, and his work is absolutely stunning. You can look at it at johnmullen.com. He's going to be leading a workshop. It's free and open to the public. We have about 4 more slots left. It's on Saturday. It's going to start at 3:00 in the 3:30 in the 3rd Street Center. We're going to be going over some tips and tricks, and he's going to give a talk at that point. Then we're going to get up and get out into the field. We're going to go over to Huntsman's Ridge and hike out there and snap some photos with his guidance and learn about how to position yourself for good photos, how to consider lighting, how to consider angles, where you're going to be, what makes for an interesting shot. All those things are going to be covered. So any aspiring photographer, whether you're a beginner or advanced, this is an awesome opportunity, and it's costs exactly $0 for you.
Awesome. We may be sending Megan up there. We haven't quite decided. She might have other things.
3 slots left.
Exactly.
<There you go.
laughs> Exactly.
Speaking of full-time jobs, though, Aaron, you're now doing this. This is your job.
Yeah. So I actually moved out about 3 years ago for a position with Habitat for Humanity. And while I loved that, in March, I left actually to start my own photography and graphic design business called Eyedrop Design. I spelled it as the eyeball. And yeah, it's been great. I completely attribute my success to Carbondale being so community oriented with the few contacts I've had that I've gathered since I've been here. Have led me to create a few websites, a few logos. It's incredible. You know, the people that you meet here, it's just a real sense of community can get you connected in a small business. So
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we may be seeing more of your work in the paper in the future.
Hey,
this was
your, so.
This was your first experience with us, right?
Yeah, it was great. I will go look at Skinks anytime you want me.
Okay, good to know. Excellent. Just to let you know, we got about 5 minutes left here in the show. This is Will with the Super Sun, bringing everything under the sun on KD&K, commercial free since 1983. Underwriting on KD&K is an effective way to market your business. Reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with KD&K's reasonable underwriting packages. Email Greg at kdnk.org. Up next is Ask the Vet, so stay tuned for that. But first, Megan, I told you we'd get back to this. our cover story and completely unexpected story when we were planning last Thursday. The big old tree in Satank.
The big old tree in Satank with a photo I snapped on my cell phone ending up unexpectedly on the cover. So yes, I am planning on coming on Saturday. No, it was just one of those serendipitous, you don't really have any way to respond other than to laugh, I think, other than you're either going to laugh or you're just going to cry, right? This neighborhood in Satank last Thursday, a week ago today, in the high winds, what was purportedly, and I have not been able to absolutely confirm this, but everyone does say it was a registered cottonwood, and it was purportedly the oldest cottonwood in all of Garfield County.
Oh.
And I can confirm from my own eyes, huge. It's massive. I think it's probably got about a 9-foot diameter. And it came crashing down and on the property that took out, you know, the poor van. It crushed the windshield of the van that was parked there. A 1964 vintage jet travel trailer that was just, you know, much beloved by its owner. It was completely destroyed right before camping season. And the neighbor's house got an unexpected kitchen remodel.
And you liked that phrase.
I loved that phrase. I thought that was great.
That was my Facebook post.
Right? but what was so funny and funny, quote unquote, it's easy for the outsiders to say it's funny, was the timing of it all. This tree came down at about 1:30 p.m. and there should have been people in that property doing a final walkthrough because that Friday it was all set to close. It was for sale. The, you know, family that owns the property still, because obviously no contracts were signed. Yeah, they were relocating to Arizona. Wife Choya and daughter already there. They're renting another location. And now Donnie Nickel is staying with a friend in Carbondale, you know, offering to clean him dinner and keep the place, cook him dinner and keep the place clean, rather, as a thanks, because he's trying to figure out what to do with this property. And the only reason that we're able to laugh about this and it wasn't a tragedy is because the prospective buyers were running late for their final walkthrough. They were finishing lunch at Silo. And so they call the realtor, Sarah Murray, and saying, hey, we're running just a little late. And thank goodness they were, because this was no joke. I mean, I walked in and I'm like, oh my gosh, insulation is falling on me.
Will it completely destroy the house?
It's unknown right now. I guess the term that they use for a modular home is totaled. They're waiting to see. I have to give Aspen Tree Service serious cred. They showed up Tuesday morning when I came back by at 8 a.m. And when we came by again Wednesday morning, it had already been pretty much all cleared out, at least on that property, because the insurance company needed it to be cleared before they could send out any kind of appraiser to assess damage. But, you know, the happy ending to this, though, is the buyers are still really interested. They were so touched because they got there 10 minutes after and all the neighbors were out like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And they're offering these people a place to stay. They're introducing themselves. And so, you know, the prospective buyers, according to the realtor, were so touched that they want in more than ever and they're willing to wait, apparently. So, you know, kind of a happy ending, maybe. Mm-hmm. But
and one last thing on that. if you do have a big old tree on your property, it's worth maybe giving a call to you know,
Aspen Tree Service or somebody.
Or somebody like it. Have them take a look at it. Those old cottonwoods have a tendency to kind of rot from the inside out and come crashing down. And so do the, you know, we had a ponderosa pine that was an eagle's
right,
nest.
Right, Glen that came
or
down.
Had historically been, I don't know that it was currently, that came down. I remember several spruces coming down in downtown. So it's worth getting ahead of that issue if you possibly can.
Yeah, they use seismographs and all kinds of things to try and gauge risk assessment. There's no way to really predict, but you can kind of get in front of it, and that's certainly worth doing, because after walking through that neighborhood, my goodness.
Yep. I would be remiss in not mentioning that it is the summer solstice, as I did at the beginning.
Happy solstice.
Yeah, we got ourselves a sunflower out in our garden, which was kind of cool. Taking that as a symbol of all the community support the sun has had as we've been doing our fundraising campaign. Katie and Kay sent out a notice helping us out. You know, we had the 100 Who Care send us in money, came real close to our goal. I'm betting with what's in the mail at the moment and any last minute folks that we're gonna hit that. And so we really appreciate that. That's what gives us the ability to employ all these, not employ full time, but help all these folks help us. And
the freelancer budget.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a huge thing, and it's one of the commitments we've made in association with some of the things we've received. So it's a huge part. This organization is never going to be a one-man show, or shouldn't be. That's that way madness lies. So thank you all for
well,
what
thank
you do.
Thank you, Will. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for phoning in. With that, I'm going to turn it over. We're going to play a little music, and then it's Ask the Vet. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.